The Simba Room Effect from RPGGods.org and FictionSuit.org.
Hello, I'm Dave, and welcome to a very special edition of the Coriolis Effect called The Simba Room Effect. This episode is an actual play podcast of the first scenario in my new Simba Room campaign called The Tale of the Lonesome Ogre. Simba Room is a game that none of us have ever played before, and this scenario was both a lot of fun and a learning experience for me, my co-host Matthew, and my brother Tony. As with our Coriolis actual play, a known mistake is better than an unknown truth. We recorded this in Matthew's front room, so please don't expect the highest of production values. But we didn't eat Pringles this time, so while you will still hear the clink of coffee cups, there should be much less crunching going on, except for the M&Ms, perhaps. It has only been lightly edited into 3 episodes. We know that some people are not great fans of actual play podcasts, but please be reassured that these will not get in the way of our usual discussion programmes. But we thought some of our listeners would find our experience of playing and learning this game interesting, as we start to explore other aspects of the Swedish role-playing game world. So please listen, and I hope you enjoy the Simba Room Effect. Welcome to episode 1 of the Simba Room Actual Play, The Tale of the Lonesome Ogre.
We're not playing Coriolis this time. We're trying out a new game from Sweden. Well, not new to everybody, but new to us, called Simba Room. And this is the first time that we've all played it. Dave is going to GM, and we thought, partly because it's a two-hander and hopefully easy to understand, and partly because we're all learning, it might make a good actual play.
So, yeah, I think the key thing to note is that I've never run this game before. I've gone through the rules, obviously. I've got an idea how they should work. There will be quite a lot of, probably, rules checking.
And I will just say, we're eating cheese this episode. It should be quieter than the Pringles from the...
not much, though, probably.
Less crunchy.
Less crunchy. Possibly. Right, then. I guess I'll postpone eating cheese. And so, a few things about the rules. So, guys, you've got your characters. I'll get you to introduce yourselves in a moment. But across the top of your character sheet, you've got your 8 attributes. So that's your accurate, cunning, discreet, persuasive, quick, resolute, strong, and vigilant. And these are the attributes that you use for pretty much everything. So all your skill tests, depending on what you're doing, will relate to one of these attributes. They will then be modified sometimes by the opposing attribute of whatever it is that you're acting against. So, for example, in combat, you would use accurate normally. Matthew, I think Potboy has got a ability where he can use persuasive instead of accurate in melee combat. But you would roll a d20, and you would need to score less, equal to or less than your score, and that's modified by a number that is generated as a result of the capability of the person you're acting against. So in combat, it'll be their defense. And that will add a modifier, either a plus or a minus, to the number you've got to try and roll under. And then you just roll the dice. And if you succeed, you succeed.
What if somebody's attacking us?
So if somebody's attacking you, you roll the dice for your defense. So this is a game where, if it's run properly, the GM should never roll a dice ever. So if somebody's attacking you, you try and defend against that by using your defence score.
What's my defence score?
It's at the bottom of your character sheet. There's
6. Right.
Mm-hmm. Modified by the accuracy of the person who's attacking you.
Right.
So you then roll to see whether you avoid the incoming attack. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for if you are trying to sneak up on a guard, say, or trying to sneak past somebody, that would be your probably your discreet. It would roll on, But that'd be modified by their vigilant score. Similarly, if they were trying to sneak up on you, you would roll your vigilant modified by their discreet. So again, it's all... I think the one thing it does kind of bring in, but let's see how it plays, is the idea that if you don't know someone's sneaking up on you, why are you rolling your vigilant? Mm-hmm. But let's see how it goes. But using your...
I suppose it's a measure of how how much you're paying attention at that particular point. How likely it is you notice them, I suppose.
Yes, but then the... I guess there's a playing thing about you knowing something's going on because I've asked you to roll the dice, rather than... And then if you fail, you've still got a hint that something's happening.
To explain how the defence rolls work again, because my defence was 3.
So defence is based on your quick.
So if I'm defending...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got to roll under 3.
So you've got to roll 3 or under on a d20. Modified by the accuracy of your opponent. So you're pretty poor in combat.
Yes. So when you say it's modified by their accuracy.
So
their accuracy could be a score up to 20.
Yeah, so...
The higher that score, the harder it is for me to succeed.
Yeah, so if they... So there's an average value. So 10 is the average value where there's no modifier. If they've got a score of 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, then it's plus 1 per point. So quite often, if you're getting into combat against somebody who's half decent, you'll have to roll a 1 in order to avoid being hit.
So is it always... Do you always have the opportunity of rolling a 1 to avoid it, regardless of...
Yes.
So it doesn't go to a point where they just hit automatically because their score is so good.
I'm not sure what the rules say on that, but that, I think, got to give you a chance of avoiding it, I think.
Yeah, though I think...
It's pretty slim.
If I get to fight, I'm getting my head kicked in.
Quite probably, yeah. Abilities and powers, which are your specialisms, effectively. Now, these are... Some of them are going to be really self-explanatory, really quite obvious, and you should have noted down the relevant text to tell you what it means. So abilities are your standard abilities. So for you, Tony, you've got things like Beast Law, so that counts as an ability. Medicus, sort of first aid, counts as an ability. Powers are your magical or mystical powers. So you've got Brimstone Cascade, Tone, which is...
Yep.
Should be written down as power, actually, rather than ability. But there are... Yeah. That's an instant thing. So powers are instant spells that you can cast. Once you've cast it, you can keep it going. So it's not like you have to keep casting it over and over and over again. So you cast it on an enemy, and as a free action, in your next turn, you can just maintain that attack whilst doing other stuff.
Without having to roll again.
Without having to roll again, yeah. If you then take damage... or something else causes you to be interrupted, then it'll stop. But otherwise, that power works in that effect. It's just constant. You can channel the power, effectively.
You have to concentrate so that you can't then do something else.
You can do something else, cause, as I said, but you use a free action each turn in order to do that. Rituals are slightly different. So rituals are things that take an hour, usually, or a bit longer, potentially, to do. So they're spells that will take you time. They're not things you can do in combat. So in combat, the key thing to mention, I think for the moment, we'll work it out as we go through the first combat, if you have one, but initiative is based on your quickness. So the higher your quick, the higher in the order you go. Okay. You can choose, if you've got a high quick, you can choose to delay your action in the initiative. So if you were going to go first, but you want to go second, you can choose to do that. But then that's set for the rest of the combat. Corruption is the next thing I was going to mention. Now, corruption is something that is very important in the game. So if you do things, so in essence, the world of Simbaroom is reacting against humankind and mankind or creatures, intelligent kinds' activities that are unnatural, and they will respond against that. Things like magic are unnatural, and so if you cast any of your spells, Tone, you will get 1d4 temporary corruption. If your corruption level reaches your corruption threshold, which you should be on your character sheet,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to start getting permanent
corruption.
When you get permanent corruption, as the name suggests, it's very, very difficult to get rid of it. Temporary corruption will dissipate at the end of a particular scene.
So that'll and you dissipate. Get 1d4 of corruption for every time you...
Hmm.
But that's not for every turn. So you cast Brimstone Cascade once. You roll 1d4 corruption. You then channel it the next turn to carry on doing damage. You don't roll 1d4 then. If you get interrupted and you then have to cast it again, you then get another 1d4.
Okay.
When your permanent corruption reaches your resolute score, you are an NPC. You are completely corrupted. So avoiding corruption is a good thing. You'll note, Tone, that your wizardry ability allows you to learn novice level wizardry powers and rituals without gaining corruption. Otherwise, you would gain corruption.
For learning. So, does that apply to casting them or just to learning?
No, that's just learning them. So, if you cast them, you then get the 1d4
temporary corruption.
Other things can give you corruption as well, like evil things out in the forest of Davakar. But the key thing to mention, to be aware of, is that you will earn corruption by casting spells.
And what counts as spells?
So
things like telepathic interrogation, which is a ritual, is that a spell?
That is a spell, yeah.
And the Brimstone Cascade, presumably.
Yeah. So everything else there isn't.
Things like Medicus and Beast Lore.
No, they are their abilities. Medicus, First Aid, Beast Lore, knowledge about beasts.
Yeah.
The last thing I'm going to mention before we start playing is...
Oh, sorry, but how long does your temporary corruption last?
It lasts until the end of that particular scene.
Okay.
But in essence, it's going to last a few hours. Okay? Yep. The last thing I'm going to mention is re-rolls. So if you've rolled a dice and you fail and you really want to roll again, there are two ways in which you can buy a re-roll.
Praying to the icons, obviously.
You can try it. It might not work in Simbaru. One is you burn a point of experience to do it. So I, as the game goes on, I'm going to try and give you experience for good bits of role-playing or good bits of play. And I will give you a red chip, which you can then, if you want to, for a reroll, burn it. You will earn some experience at the end of the game, but overall, the overall experience you'll gain for the game itself isn't going to be increased because I'm giving you some to burn. So if you want to burn an experience, it will affect, obviously, how much experience you have at the end of the game to level up.
Is that in the rules? Is that...
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So also, there's a thing about you might want to save experience between games to then have as points to burn for the next game.
Right.
But we'll get to that when we get to the end and we've got some experience to play with. The other way of getting a reroll is to take a point of permanent corruption. So I wouldn't underestimate how desperate you might need to be, I think.
Yeah, that's going to be to do that. Real, real last ditch.
Yeah.
That's only a reroll.
To avoid a
catastrophe. And that's only a reroll.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the opportunity is there. So if you needed to or you felt it was important enough, then you can do that, but you would take a point of permanent corruption. And having sat here watching YouTube chomping cheese,
while we're listening,
it's my turn.
What you should have said is, Tony, tell us about your character, and then chomping cheese.
That's why you're the best GM now.
Thank you.
I'm going to edit that
out. You heard it here first. I'm going to save that bit into a little sound bite, and then we'll get a sound move. And then every time I say anything, you'll reply, that's why you're the best GM.
I knew... The back of my mind, you're saying, "Don't say that, Dave. Don't say it. You don't mean it, so don't say it." Okay, so let me give you a little bit of background.
Would you like us to read out the background while you eat some cheese?
I think that's a great idea, actually. I wasn't necessarily going to read it all out, but I highlighted bits there.
Okay.
But feel free to read as much or as little as you like. Thank you.
21 years ago, the war against the Dark Lords and their undead hordes was finally over. The warrior queen, Corinthia, stood tall in victory. So the Ambrians spread north, back to the lands their history told them had once long ago been theirs. They found virgin plains and new lakes as they expanded beyond the Titan Mountains towards the dark forests of Davakar. The barbarians and the elder peoples who were already on those lands, the ogres, goblins, elves and similar folk, were either subdued or didn't resist the expansion, although some, most notably the elves, just faded away into the forests and were seldom seen again. The great city of
Yinderos.
The great city of Yinderos was founded and the northern outposts established. The likes of Thistlehold, Karos Fen, and Karam sprang into life. And Granite Hold was founded too. Granite Hold was even further north than many of these settlements and was more closely entwined within the forest of Davakar than even Thistlehold. Resting near the Raven's Mountain Range to take advantage of the rich mines that lay within and on the shores of the newly named Corinmere. Trade was brisk while the mines were productive. 20 years after it was established, Granite Hold found itself alone, an outpost forgotten by the very kingdom that had urged her citizens to break the frontier and to build a new life far from the warm Ambrian hearths that they had left behind. When Amla and Elgor, two young goblins travelling with the first settlers, arrived at the clear ground that would become Granite Hold, they found four things that made this place special. First was the great natural stone bridge spanning the slowly moving river that rolled from the mountains to feed Corinmere. Second was the immense tree, surely thousands of years old, standing alone like a silent guardian overlooking the lake. And thirdly, what appeared to be a statue, or perhaps a poor creature turned to stone by some evil magic, a mother ogre standing in defiance of something unseen and long departed. And finally, a young ogre sitting in the shadow of the statue, lost and confused. Against the advice of the mission's leader, an old Ambrian called Master Abel Radina, the goblins started construction of their business, a brewery and inn, outside the new walls and beside the statue. They named the place in its honour, the Inn of the Lonesome Ogre. Those early years were good for Granite Hold. New settlers arrived every day, land was cleared for farming and livestock, the river was tamed, and another small settlement, Timmel Mills, was established a few miles up the river. Mines were opened in the foothills of the mountains, and stone and iron flowed back down the river to Granite Hold and onwards. Then things began to turn. Reports of strange creatures in the mines first started to filter back. Then skirmishes with mountain ogres became more and more common. There were even rumours of giants coming down from the heights of the Ravens. The upshot was that the miners disappeared. The mines started to shut and production dried up. Now, only some goblins continue to try to mine the upper levels of those forests. Oh, God. Now, only some goblins continue to try to mine the upper levels of those mines closest to the hold. Many question the wisdom of persisting, as the mines are of poor quality and have largely been mined out already. Then, the darkness began to settle over the hold. Some said the forest had had enough of the Ambrian incursion, others that the elves were behind the evil that started to stalk the land. It started far out. Hunters and gatherers, who would only rarely delve deep into the forest anyway, reported things in the dark, watching them, following them. Then some just didn't return. Livestock started disappearing. Crops would fail. The hold's watchmen, low on numbers, low on skill and experience, but high on willingness to serve, have tried to reassure the people that life can go on. But matters didn't get better. They got worse, until even the walls were no defence. The unseen evil now stalks the very streets of Granite Hold itself when the sun goes down. The sound of the Church of the Sun's bells, ringing out when the sun touches the tops of the forest to the west, has become a daily clarion call to flee home and secure your doors and windows and hunker down to await the sunrise and survive the night.
That's where we are. Would you gentlemen like to introduce yourselves?
I am Rado Maramai. I am a changeling. I was raised as human for a while, my family believing I was their son, but it became apparent quite early on that in fact, was not human, and that the their real son had been swapped out by the elves at some stage. My family did not take this well, and as soon as they realised, immediately disowned me and cast me out. Amla and Elgor, the goblins who run the Inn of the Lonesome Ogre, took me in and took care of me. They were the only people who treated me well at this time, and now I live at the inn, sleeping in the cellar, helping out with odd jobs. It is now my family, and my home is at the Inn of the Lonesome Ogre. I don't know, I should say, obviously, anything about my real heritage, about the elves, or what their motivation was for leaving me with this human family. But I think I would, if the opportunity arose, I would like to find out.
Is the idea of children being swapped out for elves part of the stuff that's been going down recently? Or is that long-standing thing?
It is a relatively long-standing thing. The changing the elves, for whatever reason, have done this kind of thing before. But in Granite Hold, this was the first time. In fact, there were two changelings. The other one has disappeared.
For this episode, anyway.
when his parents wanted to, still loved him, regardless of whether he was a changeling or not, and wanted to keep him, but the town authorities disagreed and ran them out of town. So Grendel, the name of the other changeling, was left very much like Rado Meramai, just on the city streets, but has disappeared.
So, I am the ogre known as Potboy. Nobody knows whether ogres have got names. They never sort of share their name if they have it. So they are given names by the people they work with. And Potboy has been a feature of the brewery tap here at the Inn of the Lonesome Ogre for as long as anyone can remember. Modestly bussing tables and washing up all day. Some say he lived here before the brewery was even built. He is of unknowable age, being an ogre, with sad, dark eyes that command a certain authority. He says very little, but can stop a brawl with just a look. Indoors he stoops, because generally rooms are not made high enough, but outdoors he stands tall. I'll just tell you a little bit of the things I've got. So I've got a couple of racial traits, one of which is robust. And actually I pushed that up into advanced robust when I was generating my character.
I noticed that, yep.
Which means that robust means I can only use light armour and has to be custom made because I'm a bigger fella, and it costs 3 times the normal price. In return, the character ignores 1d6 of damage from each hit taken in addition to any armour it wears. Furthermore, it can deal 1d6 extra damage with the melee each turn. I've also got dominate, which is this idea of stopping a brawl with just a look. So I can use persuasive instead of accurate in melee combat. In social situations, the ability can also be used to scare someone into obedience and force secrets out of them. You won't hear me talk much, right? My idea with this is to be really quite a silent, normally quite talkative characters, but I'm going to try very hard not to be. I will describe Potboy's actions, obviously. But around the table, I might just stare at people. So, in a meaningful way.
Which clearly makes
perfect sense.
Perfect sense for a podcast.
but maybe it doesn't make such good sense for a podcast. I'm also steadfast, which means I can make a second attempt to succeed with a strong or resolute test when trying to break an ongoing physical effect from, for example, traps or poisons and elixirs. This includes energies from mystical powers as long as these are manifested physically in the form of fire, acid or similar. And the other trait that I have, although it doesn't really have a mechanical effect, is long lived. And I'm also a pariah.
So by pariah, that means you're looked down upon by
largely human society.
So I, in my background to this, I'd had it squarely in mind that the ogre that Amla and Elgor found sitting lost and confused by the statue was Potboy.
Mm, I guess that.
So, yeah. And I'm just confirming that you are content with that idea and
yep.
think it works.
Well, that does then make the inn named after me.
Mm.
Which is a little bit weird. But I can live with that. And, you know, I'm just a modest ogre. I mean, imagine an inn named after me. that's not how Potboy talks.
I hate
or maybe it is. Maybe that's why he doesn't
talk. That's why he doesn't talk. It sounds like Graham Norton. Okay, cool. Tony, did you want to just say a little bit about your abilities in the same vein? That'd be helpful.
Yes, I am also long-lived because of my elven heritage. I know about the beasts and creatures. I have beast lore. I'm also reasonably competent at healing, medical skill. And I have some wizardry type powers. I have the wizardry power itself, which means I can learn novice wizardry powers and rituals without suffering any permanent corruption.
So on that point, in the game, there are a number of schools of mystic thinking, and wizardry is one of them. In your background, I think, Tone, The way we were thinking of it was that you were attending the wizardry college, as it were, which is how you know wizardry, up to the point that they then recognised that you were a changeling and kicked you out. So
really, I kind of got the impression that I'd been kicked out considerably younger than because simply being at the wizardry college, what sort of age would that be?
I think you could have started it young. I think there's not a problem with that.
Because I get the impression it was a reasonably young age that it was became obvious that I was not human and got kicked out.
So I think probably sort of young teenager would be the age where it started to become clear that you were.
Okay. A bit older than I'd imagine, but that's fine.
If you're happy with that?
Yeah. To be honest, it makes the impact of it a bit higher. Because I've become obviously, you know, that age, that was my... You know, my life was kind of well set then in that case, and it would have been a bigger shock for that suddenly to be ripped up away from me.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Thank you.
But the powers I've got are Brimstone Cascade, which is obviously an attacking power, where I can unleash rampaging spirits of fire and bring down fire and brimstone against an enemy. I have Telepathic Interrogation, which means I have to touch the subject of it, but I can... basically stretch out my mind, read the thoughts and get an answer to a yes-no question from the victim. But I have to touch them to do it. So.
Mm. And that's a ritual, so you need to spend
an
hour preparing in order to do that. Cool. You could have taken another 30 seconds whilst I'm finished off my last bit of
Well, I'll just say, can we just discuss the sort of damage we do as well, out of kind of pure interest? I'm currently unarmed because I'm the pot boy at the pub, but I do 1d4 plus 1d6 damage. That 1d6 unarmed. Coming out of me being robust.
Mm.
I have some weapons. I have a dagger and a crossbow. My dagger does 1d6 damage, and the crossbow 1d10. I'm not sure what damage I would do unarmed.
Well, you use a dagger, I guess.
Yes, but if for some reason I didn't have the dagger,
I guess it might just be 1d4.
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
I also have the Brimstone Cascade, which I can't use too often because that's the mystical power.
Yeah.
And I'll get some temporary corruption for doing it, but that does 1d12 damage on a success. But even if I fail the roll on that, it still does 1d6 damage.
So it's guaranteed 1d6 damage, yeah. So in this game, if you go to zero. Toughness. You then you are in the death zone effectively, and there is a You then roll on the
death. Doesn't sound like a good place to be.
The death zone.
Welcome to the death zone. So you then have to start making death tests. And to do that, you roll a d20. And that then kind of specifies how quickly you die or whether you don't. So a one on a death test roll means actually that, you know, the damage looked a lot worse than it actually was. And you.
So lower is better.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's on all of them.
You get 1d4 toughness back. And you can carry on acting, taking action. If you roll a 2 to 10, you remain at death's threshold, but you're not on the verge of dying. 11 to 19, you are one step closer to death. So the third time you roll, so you roll this die every turn after you reach 0 hit points, zero toughness. 11 to 19, you get you're one step closer to death, and if you roll this 3 times, you then die. I know this is all giving people time to try and save you and heal you. Or if you roll a 20, you have a few seconds to say some last harsh words, but you die.
Do you have any healing skills there? Pot boy?
Healing skills? You've got to be joking. I'm a pot boy. My skills are in collecting glasses. I can hold quite a lot of glasses. Or earthenware pots, or whatever it is we're using in this world. I guess glasses are quite expensive things. What do we mine? What has Granite Hold been mining?
Iron and stone, largely.
Right. Granite, I guess.
Mm.
Quarrying the granite and mining the iron.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then occasional veins, or in the past, there were occasional veins of more precious metals, but they were few and far between. But the appetite for iron and stone across Ambria, which is all further to the south of you, mm-hmm. had been
when we were producing.
Yeah, had been pretty good. Yeah, so you've got there some maps. So you've got a map of Granite Hold. You've got a map of the area where Granite Hold is. You should have a map of the inn,
mm-hmm.
and then a wider map of the world. So
have a car.
Yeah.
So where is the inn in relation to these?
So at the bottom.
So
all the maps are facing north.
Oh, so it's in. I thought. So is this the wall?
Yes. So in the background.
I thought the impression it was outside the wall.
It was in the original. Ah. So the original wall simply covered where the main east and west square are.
Oh, there. Okay.
But the point being that Amla and Elgor felt so much protection for Potboy that they decided to build outside of that because Potboy didn't want to stay within those walls because he wanted to stay near the. Near the statue.
And that statue is still there.
That statue is still there outside the front door, yeah.
That's by the inn.
Yeah.
And so the city has grown to encompass the Lens and Ogre.
Yes, absolutely. So when they rebuilt the walls in the first 10 years, they rebuilt them far enough down to...
And that's a natural bridge, but there's another bridge I see on the plan.
Yep, there is a wooden bridge that's been built on the plan. The granite tree is the tree that was referred to in the background. And it's absolutely enormous. It's easily 30 foot across at the base, if not a bit more. I think on the map it's probably a bit more than that. It has a huge... Obviously, the bottom trunk is huge. It goes up about 10 metres, and then you've got multiple trunks coming out of that, which what in effect leaves a little platform, a little space in the middle where you can stand and people can stand in and use that as an outlook. To look around the surrounding areas. The walls of...
So this tree is high enough that you can basically see exactly the lookout post and see outside the walls.
Absolutely. The walls themselves are only about 15 feet high, so they're not... They are defensive palisade, but they're not particularly strong.
And where, for the benefit of our listeners, who may be Simbaroon players, in this map of the forest of Davakar, where is Granite Hold?
Granite Hold... is it's on the eastern side of the map. So if you're looking at the map and you look to where Karos Fen is and follow the river north, you come to another large lake, and Granite Hold is on the north bank of that large lake.
Mm-hmm.
And that lake is called Corinmere.
Gotcha. Right.
So this is a new invention. I've added this. I didn't want to play in
Thistlehold.
I thought it was a little bit too big for what I was looking to do. I mean, the adventure may well take you there one day. You never know. But Granite Hold is smaller than Thistlehold.
So this is Corinmere.
Yeah. Yes, that's right, Terry. Yeah. So you're quite far north. You're quite as an outpost. Granite Hold is quite exposed, and even more so since the interest of the Ambrians has waned because it was expensive to maintain. But by then, a lot of people have made their lives here, and a lot of people are trying to continue to keep their lives here. So it's daytime at the inn. It's quite busy. You usually get a few people in.
Do humans frequent the inn? They're not worried that it's run by ogres?
Goblins?
Goblins?
No. Yeah. So the... The majority of the population are human, are Ambrian. There's a few barbarians from the barbarian lands, which are up to the west. Not so many of those, though. There's no other ogres here, other than Potboy. There's a fair number of goblins, though, as well. And they do a lot of the menial work. They do a lot of the mining. dangerous tasks that the Ambrians, the humans, are happy to leave the goblins to do. Amla and Elgor are quite high status in the goblin community. You do get plenty of humans coming into the Inn of the Lonesome Ogre. None of them... It's strange. I mean, the fact that they do look down on Potboy a bit, but he's been here forever, so everyone's just used to him. They don't want changelings being brought up as members of families, but they don't seem to oppose your presence. So they're not victimising you or anything, but they wouldn't want you being brought up as a human child.
Does he look obviously family. Changeling? What marks him out as a changeling?
I can show you a picture in here. So imagine human, but with sort of extenuated elvish kind of features. But that's a picture of a changeling on the left.
Oh, right.
Or on my left, your right.
Right, looking quite a lot like a dark elf out of D&D.
Yeah. but it's not completely elvish, so it's definitely, it's not an elf, but it's something in between an elf and a human. But nobody has ever really understood what they are, where they come from, why the elves would swap them with children. Some suggest it's just the elves having a sick sense of humour. Others suggest there's a much more macabre and nefarious reason behind the elves stealing human children. The elves have never said anything about it. Not that there's really an opportunity to ask them.
Is there much contact with elves?
Not really, no.
No. There are no kind of elves that would wander into town and attract.
No. So the elves are in the forest. So sometimes some of the adventurers and treasure hunters who go into Davakar and some of the hunters and gatherers have seen elves, but don't ever really engage. There's no real engagement between them. So the inn itself is usually reasonably busy up until the Church of the Sun's bells start to ring, except on festival times when Amla and Elgor would bring in plenty of pallets and blankets so people could enjoy the festival throughout the night, and then everyone would just sleep on the floor in the inn at the end of the night.
So is there in the inn, is there... kind of accommodation?
There's no actual accommodation, no.
It's not an actual inn. It's a brewery.
It's a brewery with a bar, yeah. Yeah, and you two sleep down in the old barrel cellar, which has got a big cellar door out into the open, and obviously there's stairs that run up into the back of the kitchen. So... there is one such festival coming up in a few weeks. It's called the Festival of the Silver Fields. And it's, in effect, a harvest festival. It's a kind of thanksgiving for all the bountiful harvest that the gods provide for the people of Granite Hold, which, you know, is increasingly sort of ironic, considering... It's not that bountiful, no.
Talking of the gods, is there a prominent religion, or are there multiple gods that...
Well, it's a Church of the Sun.
So there's a Church of the Sun, which is Prios. Let me have a little look. Prios is the sun, god. So the Church of the Sun worships Prios, the sun. And that's the prevailing Ambrian religion.
The goblins probably have some religions of their own, but Ambrians don't really care too much about that. But as the leading theology, and most people are reasonably God fearing, it's the Church of the Sun. Yeah.
And in this world, do the gods interact with people? I mean, is there real evidence that they actually exist?
Not really. Not that you've seen, anyway. So, as with every year, Amla and Elgor are planning an event here at the Inn of the Lonesome Ogre to celebrate the Festival of the Silver Fields. But they need supplies, and you can tell that they are... I mean, they're both very old now. You know, goblins don't live very long. They're both in their 30s, which is getting quite aged for goblins. And they are concerned that supplies haven't been arriving, particularly in order for them to be brewing the amount of beer and stuff that they need to brew in advance of the festival and the festivities. So the supplies tend to arrive from Tymal Mills. So Tymal Mills is to the north. It's a few miles up the river.
Yep.
Which is where the outpost was set up in Tymal Mills because it's a perfect place not only for using the river to drive the mills with water wheels, but there is a natural gorge which funnels winds coming from the northeast. And so they've built a range of windmills there as well to take advantage of the winds that are particularly persistent and strong and reliable in that area. And what they tend to do is they grind all the relevant grain. They mash up the barley and the malt, stick it into barrels that are marked up, and then they're put into the river to float down. And they'll arrive
with dwarves inside.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you haven't come across any dwarves.
Okay, just checking.
There is an expansion that brings dwarves in, but I don't have it.
Okay.
So at the moment, there are no dwarves.
Don't exist.
And those barrels are then just because it's all pretty barren. There's no other people here. The way it's been run is that the barrels have just been dropped in the river. And they float down the river, end up at the north gate of Granite Hold, where they're fished out of the water and then transported to whoever is expecting to receive the delivery. There are boats that go up and down the river sometimes, like long barges, but the river is narrow but fast and deep, so it's very difficult to get the boats up river, which is why they tend to just let the barrels float down. Can you both please make a vigilant test?
Ah, so there's something to see.
Again, but that will be adjusted by so -5 to your number.
I've got to get 5 or less. I've got vigilant 10.
Yep.
So it's -5 to what we roll. It's minus five to your target. Yep. Okay, so that makes it harder.
Yes.
Okay. I spot something,
and you need to get to equal
or less.
I haven't got a clue. I'm totally in my own world. No idea what's going on.
Okay, Potboy, as you're busying yourself going around the tables and clearing stuff up on the upper part of the main bar area, so you'll see that you come in there.
In here.
No. Hi. So if you hang on, you're on the right thing. So this is the front door here.
Yep.
With the statue. This is all seating and everything, with the door to the kitchens. These steps go up to here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So here at the level above is a rail and more bar area.
Right, okay.
So you can stand at the rail.
You look down into that.
Exactly, yeah. So here you're still on top of the kitchen. Right. You are clearing some tables up here,
mm-hmm.
and you see you're not far from Amla and Elgor. And
it's just like a bar here. This
yes,
side.
That's right. And they're talking in lowered voices because they don't, I think they're trying to keep it. But it's Amla says to Elgor that we're nearly going under here. If we don't get that delivery, we're not getting enough trade. We need the
fillers are fleecing us.
We need the Festival of the Silver Fields to really keep us going. And Elgor's like, well, what can we do? What should we
what do you want us to do? The deliveries haven't come. And then they see that you are a bit close and they're going, so that'll be 10 barrels of golden acre for potboy. Golden acre, should we have that for this year's festival? I guess for the listeners, that's a knowing look.
Can I use my persuasive to, you know, I've grown up with these guys. I see them kind of as, well, I haven't grown up, but you don't know how old I am. But
No, it's a good point that you make that actually it's not necessarily a young ogre.
Yeah.
It's just a lost and confused ogre.
Yeah.
That was found by the statue.
But I do kind of, you know, they've been my guidance into this human world. They've been the people that have supported me as my environment has changed and stuff. So I look at them as some sort of proxy parent, possibly. I've never expressed that to them because I never express anything to anybody. But I will, through the power of my stare, try and persuade them to look at them in a sad sort of way and try and persuade them with just a look to be honest with me and to not try and put on a positive face.
Okay. So that's going to be a persuade roll for you against they are probably resolute, I think, because they don't want to,
they want to
worry you.
Yeah.
So that's minus 2.
Minus 2. So I've got to get 13 or less to persuade them. And I get 14.
Okay. They see that, you know, you're obviously looking concerned. And they don't worry, Popway. Everything's fine. Right.
I will endeavour to give them a smile.
Okay. I'm sure you can give them a smile.
Reassure them. And just go about my business some more. However, I am concerned that they haven't got a delivery they were expecting.
No, they haven't. So as the day begins to wear on, it's getting into the afternoon. A lot of the talk in the inn is about the latest victim of Brother Magister. Brother Magister being, he calls himself the Master of the Sun Faith, but everyone else thinks he's just an acolyte at the Church of the Sun who's making a, you know, bigging himself up rather a lot. And his latest victim was an old dowager called Mrs. Paris. And she was accused of being behind the dark evil that's stalking the streets of Granite Hold. And at the moment, her body still swings from the noose, which is hanging from the granite tree in the west.
So the granite tree is also our scaffold, as well as being the olive tree here.
It is today. There isn't a permanent scaffold, but she was hanged from the tree. A
multi-purpose tree?
Yesterday.
I'm not sure I like that.
There's quite a lot of... it's very mixed feelings from the clientele in the inn. Some think that this is just an outrage that this poor woman was singled out. Others think, well, if Brother Magister is actually trying to protect us, then maybe he's onto something. Maybe he does know. Maybe this was justified. Maybe she was behind it. But there's no real... Nobody stopped it.
Was there a trial or anything? Was it even a kind of show witch trial, or did...
There was a brief trial. There is a judge in town called Gwadar Arig, if I could say that clearly. But Judge Gwadar is thought to be in cahoots with Brother Magister, and that whatever Brother Magister says, that, you know, Judge Gwadar would go along with. He doesn't seem to be very strong.
And is it just the judge's decision whether someone's innocent or guilty and gets punished accordingly?
Absolutely.
Well, sounds pretty dodgy to me. I wouldn't trust any of these humans.
You're saying that to the clientele?
No, I'm not saying it. In my head.
Okay, the day is sort of slowly rolling on. A couple of your clientele are getting really quite drunk. One of them is a goblin, who make a vigilant roll.
But you can add no modification.
You can add plus two to your target number.
Yep.
No.
20. Is that a critical fail?
I mean, 20 is in effect critical fail. Yes.
Is there any consequence? There?
Not on this occasion.
I'm really not paying attention or anything.
No.
No idea what's going on.
this goblin is called Shiggy,
mm-hmm.
and he's a miner, and he's lost everything in the mines. So his crew are all either dead or lost or fled. After what he claims was an attack by a Frostpeak giant when there were the mines a couple of weeks ago, and he's basically drowning his sorrows at the moment. There's also a woman who, again, make a vigilant roll, please. See whether you know her.
12, which is plus 2 still I would get.
No, a 16, which is a failure, whatever.
Okay. This probably reflects quite well, actually, seeing Potboy's been around forever. And I guess just sees everybody and you haven't been here that long. Or you were a child and perhaps weren't paying attention in the same way.
So not paying attention.
So this woman is called Lucine, and you know that.
Sorry, how do you spell that?
Lucineh.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that her husband, who was a hunter called Arsene, went out to hunt a week ago, and has never come back. And she is also very drunk, and is sort of slumbering in her place.
She's human.
She's human. Yep. Again, vigilant test, both of you, please.
I like this test. Don't make that one, though.
Yes, I'm having a look up from.
Okay.
Gazing at my navel.
When you both sort of notice, because she's sort of sobbing and making a bit of a scene, a little bit. You remember that she has three young children: Thomas, Tauros, and Talin. And she's beginning to bewail their futures. And what's going to become of them now that she's certain that Arsene has died in the forest?
Arsene.
That's the name of her husband, yep. Okay, you hear the daily sound of the bells of the Church of the Sun.
Right. So I will immediately, this is just routine for me, is I start picking up all the pots.
Yep.
Possibly even those that are half drunk, knowing that unless people are gulping them down at the moment, they should be going there.
You've got, yeah, so this gives you about less than half an hour.
Yeah, so
before the sun actually sets.
So this is effectively closing time as opposed to last orders, I'm guessing. So I start stacking the pots up.
I guess I'll do it as well and help him out.
Yeah, okay. As you're doing that, you go to take the drink from Shiggy. He says,
Potboy, can I sleep here tonight? I don't wish to return to an empty hall.
I consider for a moment. I look at.
So give him a meaningful look.
Well, considering. Give him a meaningful look. Go on.
No,
go on. That's not meaningful.
You're making me laugh.
I won't tell you what that looked like.
And then I'm patting it on his shoulder.
Okay.
He says, I'll have another one of these then, please. He's got a big jug of ale.
I hold up my hand.
For money?
Well.
Presumably.
Yeah.
He's got some coins on the desk. He slides a
I take across. The requisite amount for another pint.
Yeah.
And take his... I'll take everything to the bar, but I'm keeping his mug separate. Put everything back on the bar. Pour this, give this to one of the goblins.
Amla takes it.
And I'll bring it back to him. Okay. And I'll exchange the money. Obviously, give her the money as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's good. So he's sort of settling himself in. The other patrons are tending to get up and get out as soon as the bells start to ring. There's lots of downing of drinks, and the place is clearing quite quickly. normally your responsibilities, Potboy, would be to include securing all the external doors and windows, including those on the balcony, on the veranda, the cellar door. Sort of go around the...
Right, so once most of the cups are away, I will do that thing.
Okay.
Tone,
what are you doing?
Well, presumably my role in this would be to help Potboy in these duties, so I don't know, we kind of share out the which doors to check, but I'll go and check some of the... Maybe I'll go upstairs and do the ones there, if we're doing the ones downstairs.
Okay.
I might well do this outside, because these ceilings are all a bit low for me, so I take the opportunity for you to do the what a normal size ceiling's for you, but make me crouch a bit. So I do the stuff around the outside and lock the stuff on the outside that needs closing and shutters going across there. So I'll go around and do that. Obviously, we leave the main door open for the last drinkers to leave.
Okay, you can still hear the bells appealing because they ring until the sun has actually gone down. But the bells
while
still
I'm
ringing.
Outside, where should this delivery have come from? You know, where? What do I know about where these?
So if you look at the map of Granite Hold, mm-hmm. So you see where the inn is at the south. Yeah. The north gate and the North River Gate are here.
Uh-huh.
So the barrels would normally come up to the gate here. They'll be retrieved by the wharfmen.
Uh-huh.
The wharfmen would settle it here, and they would either deliver them to you, or they would send a runner to tell you that they're ready to be delivered, and you could then go and get them.
Okay. And we normally deliver them via the streets. We don't float them down the river again.
No, because the river is quite fast.
Well, while I'm here, I'm just going to
go... I think, in theory. So you could probably decide for yourself.
Right, I'm going to just go to the bank of the river here and look up and just see what activity is going on up there in this last half hour of the day.
Well, up here, trying to see what's going on up
there? Trying to see all the way through to town.
Okay, that's a couple of hundred metres.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really see much beyond the bridges.
Yeah.
You can see people moving across the bridges quite quickly. As you'd expect this time of night, most people are now, if they're not home already, are now making a beeline to get back to their homes and secure mm-hmm. themselves for the night. You get around, and as you come back in the...
Thanks, there's Granite Tree Tavern, there's some competition in town.
Yeah, there are, and you've got...
they brew beer, don't they? Or do they have their own brewery?
Yeah, you brew your own beer.
No, sorry, they take our beer. If we're the brewery, or are they other breweries?
That's a good question. We'll have to play and see, won't we?
Right, okay. I'll take them a delivery. Maybe you're selling our beer now.
We'll have to see, won't we? So yes, you've got the Blackbeard Hostel, which is also another inn.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a place called a hovel in the slum, what's called the slum wall, that area, which is largely goblins, but not entirely. Okay, so as you are finishing up, you're locking up, Tony, you're locking up indoors,
yep.
Matt, you're locking up outdoors. You come back in through the front door, just as the bells stop ringing, to find that, other than Shiggy, the cooks have gone and the maids have gone.
Mm-hmm.
Lucinae is still asleep on... like slumped on the table where she was sitting. So she hasn't left.
She kind of stirs a little bit after you tap her on the shoulder.
For the benefit of the listeners, I was tapping my GM on the shoulder.
Well, that's why I said tapping on the shoulder. So, okay, she sort of begins to stir and slumber, and she goes, the bells haven't even gone yet. Leave me alone.
I put my arm around her shoulders and gently... I'm a very gentle ogre. Lift her to her feet.
Okay. You can do that. She's like, leave me alone. What are you doing?
Can I show her the empty pub?
Where are you at this point, Tony?
Well, I guess I've just finished locking upstairs, so I'll be coming back down. So I'm probably just coming into the main bar area to see what's going on.
Okay. So it's now, it's obviously, it's... Yeah, the sun has set, so it's darkening outdoors. She suddenly looks around and sees and goes, My children are alone. And she makes for the door.
So how?
She's quite drunk, so she's stumbling.
I suppose we better again see her home, make sure she gets home. All right. Do we know where she lives? Do you have any idea? Do we know our customers well enough to know that?
Make a vigilant roll. A vigilant? Sorry. Yeah, now make a vigilant roll, but at minus -5.
Nope.
Neither of you know where she lives. So she reaches at the door. She's kind of rattling it and trying.
I haven't closed the door yet.
Okay.
The front door I've left open.
Okay. Well, she opens the door.
We're going to ask her, where do you live, dear? How far away? Can you remember where you live?
Make a persuade roll. She's quite drunk.
Persuade. Oh, against. Can you persuade?
I can do persuade.
I can't really.
But you start.
So actually, no. You just use that one. So you get +2 on your target roll then.
+2.
Yeah.
No, that's fine.
No. She's just hysterical. My children, they need me. And she like opens the door.
Okay, I'm gonna
it's dark outside. You know it's unwise to go outside after dark. Okay, she steps out.
I'm gonna go and run and grab my dagger and crossbow.
I guess they're in the in the barrel cellar, which is going to take you time to get there.
Yeah.
Potboy, what are you doing?
So Potboy can actually speak if he wants to, can't he?
When he's got something to say.
He does. I don't understand side language, Potboy.
I sort of wave my hand that, you know, he should go to bed, that I'll follow her home.
Okay.
But I'm not saying it.
Okay, well maybe we should go together, be on the safe side.
So as she goes out, Shiggy's like, whoa, you don't want to do that, lady? So are you going to get your weapons?
Yes, I'm going to run down and get them and get back as I can.
Is there such a thing as a torch or flaming brand in the inn that I could take to light our way?
You can. There'll be lanterns that are lining the walls. Yeah, you can take one of those down.
So I pick up.
Okay,
the lanterns.
Can you both make a vigilant test, please?
Give yourself a high vigilant score now. Yes.
Okay, Tone. I don't know where the map of the
the end.
Thing is, yeah. So, you've got to go down here to get to the cellar.
Yep.
So, so these doors are pretty heavy. Mm-hmm. This is a cellar doors, but they're not airtight, so you can see little gaps and stuff. Mm. There's definitely some kind of shadow that comes past that, and it rattles.
So that's to the outside.
Yep.
And that's sort of slightly lower level than that bit.
So this bit actually, so this is the barrel cellar. Mm-hmm. So these steps come down here.
Oh, so I'm down here, not
yeah.
So this is the ground floor, isn't it?
This is the ground floor. So that is up against the wall, but it goes down into the barrel cellar.
Yep.
So it's like a big.
Okay, I'm going to grab my weapons and run back up.
Okay.
Potboy, there's something moving around out there.
Okay. Matt.
We've come out here.
Have you gone out already?
Yeah.
Yes, because
she's gone. I'm
she sort of hesitated. She sort of hesitated at the threshold.
I'm going to shout to Amla and Elgor. We've got to nip out for a bit. Lock the door behind us. We're back soon.
Okay, they go. Don't go outside. And Shiggy's going, what are you doing? Because you know, going outside after dark is very dangerous.
I say, oh, Potboy's already gone. I have to go after him.
Okay, can we work out some initiative orders, please?
So what's it based
on? No, I don't know how to work out
initiative. It's based on quickness.
Oh, I'm going to be going anytime soon then.
No, me neither.
So what's your quickness, Tone?
5.
Okay.
Matthew? 9.
Okay, so as you run out onto the street, so with the map... we're not eating those at the moment. Let's put this down there. We can have both maps, so it's a reference. So the front door
comes out into a little plain, little sort of grassy bit here, and then you're up to the road, or the path really. So it's not a proper paved road or anything. These are some dwellings and some other buildings as are over here. So she runs up to the road, and as she gets to the road, she stops, and screams. So Tony, you are probably coming back up here at this point. Potboy, you are so just out here. You've seen her stop. You've heard her scream, but you don't know what. You can't see anything else for the moment. It's your action, Matt. So in this game, you get two actions. What is in effect a move action, and what is in effect a combat action? Combat action doesn't have to be combat, but it's something other than just moving.
Okay.
And then you simply get some free actions, which can be things like automatically get to defend against an attack, for example. Right.
She screams. I can't see what she's screaming at.
No.
Is there? I cast my eyes quickly about. Is there something heavy I can pick up to use as a club or something?
Make a vigilant roll, please.
On a d20?
Yep.
So much better if it was a d10. Do I get any sort of bonus?
No.
No. Okay, so
nothing obvious, no.
So having looked around, I move deceptively fast in that I look like I'm moving quite slowly. And I am quite slow because I'm 9, but I take big steps.
Yep.
So I close the distance between myself and where she is.
Okay. Tony.
okay, I'm just going to run out, see where Botway is, and run after him with dagger in one hand, crossbow in the other.
Okay. As you do that, you notice, or you can't fail to notice, that you assume it's Shiggy has slammed the door behind you, and you hear a thunk of the arm coming
said.
Down.
I did say to tell him to lock it behind me.
Okay, the next round. Matt, you're closing with her. You're not quite to her yet. I'll get you to roll for her to try and stick to the players who do all the rolling. it's quite dark and dim, the light. It's not pitch black yet, but it's not light bright at all. And the darkness around us just seems to undulate and almost, just for a fraction of a second, become a sliver of it becomes almost pitch and swipes at her. She is coming under attack from something. So it's going to be its accurate against her defense. So its accurate is that. Her defense is going to be... she's quite good, actually. She's not wearing any armor or anything. So she needs 12... to avoid the attack.
10.
So this suddenly almost corporeal but still wisp-like arm, sword, stick, something swipes through the air, and she manages to sort of duck around from it. But she falls to the ground and is screaming.
Okay. Am I within distance now?
You can use your move action to close with her, yes, or...
Right, I will move my... move action to close with that, keeping my eyes fixed on the hard darkness.
Okay, it seems to have faded away a bit.
So, having closed with that,
yep. So you have an action. You can do a second move action as well, I think. But you can only do one kind of combat or medical or.
Right. Well, I grab her shoulder and pull her to me.
Yep.
And.
So that's sort of, you're picking her up off the floor in doing that, because she's sort of fallen down on her hands.
Oh, right, yes. Yep. Yeah. So I pick her up. Not fully up.
Yeah.
But
get her to her feet.
I've got lantern in one hand, and I drag her back to the inn, towards the inn.
Yeah, okay. Tone, could you make both of you make a vigilant roll, please?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. As Potboy is dragging the screaming... Lucene back towards the doors. You're coming up alongside you,
And kind of looming out of the dark is just something. You don't know what it is, but it's big and it's malicious, and there's wisps of stuff swirling towards you.
I'll try and shoot it with my crossbow.
Okay.
See if that has any effect at all.
So make a roll. So it's your accuracy.
Yep. Don't get any modifiers.
You get -2.
-2.
Yep.
So it's -2 to my target.
-2 to the target number, yeah.
Okay, so I need 9 on my
space. Yay! Okay, so the damage of your crossbow is
1d10.
1d10, if you could roll that.
4.
Okay. It definitely hits something, but it's not like it's totally solid. No. So it sort of hits it, and it wobbles like a dart not going in properly, and then it drops to the floor. But it definitely hits something. Okay, next round. This thing is upon you. And it'll get 2 attacks. So, can you both roll quickness, please?
16.
Is that a success?
2 success.
Yeah. No.
Mine was a success.
And can you roll for Lucene?
Excuse me, 16. Yeah.
So you succeed, but you both failed. So this thing flails at both you and Lucene. So the first swipe goes at her. So she, to avoid that, will need to roll.
Can I roll? Can I kind of, because I brought her to me, can I kind of shelter her from the place?
Yes, I think, okay. Make a quickness roll again to see if you can interject yourself in the way.
Yes.
Okay, so both attacks go on you then, Potboy.
Yes.
So, to avoid that, you need to roll your defense.
-1 twice.
So, I have a 25% chance of success. No. Yes.
Okay, so you managed to avoid one of them. So, you take 3 damage.
I don't.
But you reduce it by 1d6, don't you, I think? For your for your robust.
In return, the character ignores 1d6 damage from each hit taken. Yeah.
Okay, so it hits you, and it kind of burns and sizzles, but actually doesn't do any, just singes your shirt or the skin on the back of your arm or something. Okay, so it's your go then, Matt.
I run with Lucene towards the door, shouting, now it's worth saying.
Door! Odor!
That's just going to scare everyone. They're going to go, not
open
that.
Odor! Open the door! Okay. Fine. Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm also going to run off the door, but I'm going to back towards the door with my reloading my crossbow.
Yep.
In terms of reloading the crossbow, does that count as an action? Or couldn't I assume it?
That is a stunningly good question to which I have no idea what the answer is. Let me look it up. The index in this is really, really good, except for crossbow. It doesn't actually have listed.
Anyway, I'm going to be backing towards the door.
Yep.
Oh, the reloading crossbow, once it's reloaded. Training it on the...
Yeah, let me find the equipment page. Equipment and weapons, here we go. Okay, crossbow... Doesn't seem to give it a reload a negative projectile weapons. A crossbow requires a movement action to be reloaded. While reloading a bow or a sling is a free action. So basically you can move back whilst reloading, but that's your action for this turn.
That's what I'm doing.
Yep, cool.
Staying facing the backing off face.
Yep.
Staying facing the thing.
Cool. Potboy, can you make a persuade roll, please?
I can.
And you're making that, where is he? Resolute, probably. So that's at -2. And because of the circumstances, I'm going to give you another -2. So basically, you're shouting to convince Shiggy to open the door when he now knows there's horrible things out here trying to kill people.
Yeah, Shiggy was allowed to stay in this place. He's got to get some shit. I come Amla barging through this fucking door.
Yeah, Amla and Elgor are up the top.
Anyway, 14 against 15, but you said I was -4.
Yeah.
So, no, I fail.
No, okay. So you reach the door, and it's like, hasn't been opened.
Have I got an action?
Yes, you have.
Right, what can I do to smash the door open with my strong?
Well, are you sure you want to do that? Because we want to be able to shut the door again afterwards, isn't
it? Yeah, well, sorry, Shiggy should have opened the door.
You would need to make a strong roll against the strength of the door.
That's been a record. I'm not convinced this is the most advisable course of action.
So the door is pretty strong, so it's -5 when you're strong.
So 8 or less.
11.
Okay.
Now, you have Steadfast. I think that might allow
you to... Oh, yes. What does Steadfast allow me to do? Does
it specifically say resist?
No.
Or is it...
With a strong or resolute test when trying to break an ongoing physical effect from traps or a chemical. So no, I think that's not about bashing doors down.
No, probably not. Okay. So, yeah. There's a huge... on the door. You can hear shouts from inside. Obviously... Amblet and Al Gore. Al Gore?
Al Gore?
That's an inconvenient truth.
Al Gore, not Al Gore. I don't know, I'm getting Al Gore every time I say it. You can hear Amblet and Al Gore. I think Al Gore's dead, he's going to die in sleep tonight. You can hear them shouting inside, "Open the door! Open the door!" As it has another attack.
Okay, I'm keeping my back to the door and trying to protect.
Okay. So you are definitely going to get a attack.
Yeah.
Tone, can you do a quick test, please?
Yes.
So, again, I'm afraid Potboy's going to be attacked twice.
No, sorry.
So...
Thank you.
So your defence is...
My defense is 6, but
okay, no, sorry, that's Tony's is 3. Nice. So it's mine. You get -1 for its accuracy, so you need 5 or less to avoid.
5 and 11.
So you take 3 damage again. And again, you're okay.
Take 1 point.
So you take 1 point of damage, and can you make a
so that's
it's 1 point of damage. Yeah, can you take a resolute test, please?
Resolute test. Now, this is where's resolute?
It's 11 for you, I think.
Where am I seeing that from?
It's one of your...
Ah, there it is.
Yep. Basically, this hurts like nothing you've...
17, but I do get to re-roll that one. 9.
You do, yes. Okay, now that was exceptionally painful. It just sears. It's like a red-hot, almost needle-thin shard being put through your shoulder. Tone, your action.
How close is this thing now?
It's right on top of you. You can shoot it? Yeah.
I can shoot it. I'll shoot it then. If I hit it with my dagger, what would I be?
Accuracy again.
Still accuracy. Yeah, I'll shoot it with my crossbow.
Oh, no. No, it is accuracy. Yeah, not strong.
I don't get any penalty because it's with my crossbow because it's close.
No.
Okay, I'm shooting it with my crossbow then. So that hits...
Okay, roll your damage, please.
D10 damage. 9.
Okay, well, that definitely hit something. Again, this is just a kind of amorphous thing that is almost every moment sort of solidifying into something that looks vaguely familiar, almost a huge sort of shrouded human shape to some sort of beastly creature. But that definitely, you did 9, did you?
9, yeah. And then I'm also shouting, because I'm now assuming I'm back against the door, I'm shouting, "Open that dodding door! That's us!"
Okay.
When I said lock the door, I don't mean lock it, and don't let us back in!
You can hear the bar being pulled away and the door being opened. but this thing is right on the doorstep now. So it's...
Is there any...
Lucinae's action.
History of these things coming into houses?
Yeah, hell yeah. If they're let in, yes.
Okay. Right. That's true.
That's why you bar the doors and lock the windows. Lucinae goes first, and she was sort of right by the door, so she's just sort of falling into the room and been pulled in by Amblo and Elgore. Shiggy is sat on his backside a few feet away, where obviously Amblo and Elgore have thrown him to one side to get the door open. It's go, so it has another attack. So can you both make
Quickness rolls.
Quickness rolls to see who he goes for.
Yeah,
13.
Failed that one.
Both failed, so you both take one attack. Matthew, for you, it's your defense minus one. That's five.
No.
So you take a hit, take three damage.
No, I don't.
Nope, okay. Tony, it's your defense minus one.
Two or less. 13, yeah. No.
No, that'll be a hit then.
So you take three damage.
Three. Unless you have armor.
No, light armor. I have light armor.
Protection 1d4. So roll 1d4 to see how much damage you take away.
Two. So you take 1 point of damage. Please make a resolute roll.
So basically this tendril that spikes you in the back and it just is absolute agonizing feeling.
Resolute.
Cuts right through you.
It's 15. Just.
Yeah, you're okay. You can resist the pain, but you... So it's your go, Matt.
Right. She's inside. He's about to go inside, yep. So I'll take a swing at the beast.
So it's accuracy.
Or persuasive.
Or persuasive. Minus two.
Give him a hard stare.
Because of his
quickness. In fact, I will roar at the beast as well. And swing out like that.
Yeah.
And 10. So I hit him.
So you hit him. For how much damage?
For... This is unarmed attack. And I get 3 8 points of damage.
Okay, you can feel this thing as you hit it. It's not solid, but it's not completely insubstantial. It's just almost like you're fighting through treacle when you hit it. Can you please make a resolute roll? Because that hurts.
16, I'll just do that again. 5, yes.
Okay. Again, yes. Absolute searing pain going through your fist and your claws where you hit him, but you managed to resist. Your action.
I'm going to back through the door whilst reloading my crossbow.
Okay. Amla and Elgor are trying to grab you and trying to pull you back into the thing, but you're not going to get the door closed until the end of the next round. So Lucinae's out of it, so the creature is trying to force its way into the door space. So it's you're in the way, Matt, so it's going to be a strong versus strong because it's trying to push you back so we can fill the space and block the doorway.
I'm strong.
So so you make a strong roll at minus four.
How are those minuses worked out?
So the attribute of the creature you're against, so in this case it's got a strength of 14. So it's minus, so you get a negative bonus on your roll, the higher it is.
So you would get 10. A positive, if he was 9, would that give you a plus 1?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, so it's a bonus if they're under 10 and they're negative if they're
Exactly. Under 10. So you get minus 4, so he's slightly stronger than you, fractionally.
So I'm looking at getting 9 or less to defeat him. 5.
Right, okay, so he's tried to push his way in. This is not a man by any means, but you managed to kind of hold him at just outside the threshold of the door. Your action, poor boy.
Can I slam the doors?
Yes, you can.
I will do that. Slamming of the doors.
Right, the doors have been slammed, and the creature obviously rattles the doors and is really frustrated by its prey having escaped it. But after a few moments of rattling the doors, the rattling stops. And there's suddenly an eerie silence.
Right.
You get a little sense that there's a shadow moving around the building. Every now and then you can hear a window rattle.
Okay.
Not sure if it's the wind.
I will pick up the goblin, take him to the top of the stairs, put him against the window, and open the latch of the window.
Now I'm getting the measure of Potboy. Okay, you need to do a strength thing for that, I think, to grab him.
Against his...
No, actually, I think you need to do an attack to grab him,
right.
But not for damage. And then it'll be strength to see. So you're accurate against his quick. I'll give you a bonus of surprise, because I don't think he's going to be expecting it. So that's no bonus either way.
So to just grab him, it's a quick...
No, it's an attack, so it'll be persuasive.
Yeah. So what did you say, a bonus?
No bonus, no. Either way.
Got him.
Okay, you grabbed him. Now, to hold on to him, it's a strength test.
Okay.
He's pretty strong for a goblin. But I'll give you, so it's minus two overall against your strength, so you get 11.
Nah.
Okay, he manages to, like, wiggle free. But he's sort of still right in front of you, but you haven't managed to carry him up the stairs in the way that you wanted to. He's like, get off me!
Open the door.
What, now?
I turn away.
As you turn away, Amla goes up to him and says, you heard what he said. You should have opened the door when he was told you. We're not going to throw you out, but you're not welcome here anymore, Shiggy. And he looks a bit sheepish. And he goes and sits down in the corner at the bottom bit and says, can I at least buy another beer?
You're banned.
Right, so I can see the measure of this campaign is we spend all the time in the inn serving beer. This isn't a going out and adventuring shit campaign, is it? I mean, even though I am relatively unharmed, I am still...
did you take any damage there?
I took 1 point of damage.
Do we just heal naturally, or can I? Is it worth me doing
anything? You'll heal 1 point a day naturally. And you can do your medica skill is a once a day per patient.
Can I use this on myself?
You can, yes.
Okay. I can try and heal you if you want. How much damage do you take?
Just I took one. A point of damage.
Okay, so it's a cunning.
And this is a spell or a skill?
This is a skill.
A skill. Okay, it's like first aid in effect.
So it's cunning, which is 17. So yeah, so well you heal 1d4, but that's going to be a minimum of one. And then I can go myself as well. Actually succeed. So I only took one as well. So.
Cool.
Lucia, whatever her name is, didn't take any hits, did she?
No, she didn't, no. She is just lying on the floor, a bit distraught.
Yeah, so well, you'll have to stay here for the night now, dear.
My children.
Well,
my
if children. They're sensible enough to stay indoors, they'll be fine. We'll go and see them in the morning. All right.
Go and see them in the morning, dear.
You know, that's a way of talking to people. Persuaded me, yes, son.
I wonder if there should be a bonus, or kind of a racial bonus for an ogre, seeing what? You are.
Well, though, I mean, my racial bonuses are my robust.
I know.
So, you know, that's what protected me from a lot of those things.
But you're 8 foot tall, whatever it is.
Yeah, you mean the strength bonus.
And you're not as strong as the goblin.
Well, thin and wiry.
Yeah.
I'd be like, got him. He just wriggled out my hands. There may be some other things I can, you know, there's some other traits I can probably get with experience points to if
give,
I want to.
Give strength, yeah, potentially.
Now, story-wise, sure. You don't need to be strong from the beginning of the story.
No.
As it were. But you might become strong later.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with how that combat went. But I am also aware of the fact that we're only going outside at daytime. And we're going to stay in the inn and have the adventures of running an inn.
Thought you survived that combat rather well, actually.
I did, yeah, but, you know, there were enough hints there that things could have gone wrong.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, I missed that bit. These creatures are a part of the dark and get an automatic surprise attack every turn unless a vigilance against quick is made.
Right.
Yeah, another reason not to go outdoors at night. So the night passes. Lucene eventually falls asleep. And then wakes up the next day with a hangover. And as soon as the bells ring to denote daytime, she's out the door and she's gone. Amlo and Elgor sort of get up and you all start preparing the inn for the day. Amla is looking quite worried and a bit
on edge. And after about 20 minutes of sort of fiddling with some mugs and things behind the bar, he asks you both to come over and sit with him for a moment. And he says...
I put up a little chair that looks tiny. So it's like I'm
sitting like an adult sitting on a
chair. Invincible chair.
Yeah, that's cool. He says,
but this one is the one chair in the inn that I know can support.
Take your one. I've only had some darkness points. Break the chair. Amla says, I know that you've noticed that things aren't as well here as they should. And
have we? Oh yes, we have. That's right. Yeah.
And I'm conscious that yesterday, Potboy, I wasn't entirely truthful with you, which is not something I wish to do. I wish you're part of our family, both of you living here, and being truthful with one's family is perhaps the most important thing. Also, doing things for one's family is important, and I have something I need you to do for me. It's early morning now. I think you have time. I need you to go and find out what's happening with the deliveries for the festival. I don't know where they are. Whether they've even reached the city. If we don't get them soon in the next few days, we won't have time to brew the beer we need to brew, and we'll miss the opportunity of the festival. And we need that opportunity to keep this roof over our heads. I wouldn't ask you to do this normally, but we're in a dire place, and Elgor and I are too old to run around trying to find the supplies, and you're the only people that we trust.
Of course. We'll be right on that. PB. Is that what I call that? No, okay. Potman. That's a very meaningful look there.
Well, that's the I'm going to tear you in your arse look. How long do I have to put up with this before I give Matthew an extra experience point for being irritating?
If you want me to be irritating.
They say, look, go and see if anything's come into the wharf. If not, go to Tymol Mills and see what's happening.
How far in time travelled does it take to get to Tymol Mills?
Tymol Mills is 7 miles.
Oh, not that long. And what's the terrain like up the side of the river? Is it? Is there a path? Easily passable?
There is a path. It's reasonably easy. It's not the easiest. It's quite rugged, but it's... Given a fair wind, you should be able to get there and back in a day. Okay. It might be quite tight to do the whole thing in a day. You certainly don't want to be out in between Granite Hole and Tymol Mills at night.
You have been listening to The Simbaroom Effect, presented by RPGGods.org and FictionSuit.org. The music was the Carvosti theme by Iron Pact Orchestra, used with permission of Jan Ringer. Typefaces are Code by Font Fabric and Season of the Witch Black by ImageX.